Well, you and I tend to think that mask wearing is a recent phenomenon. We all know there's been much debate over the last few years over mask wearing, and it's not my purpose to talk about that debate of any kind or get involved in that debate. But the idea of people wearing masks is not a new concept. You are like, yes, of course, back in 1918, they had the Spanish flu epidemic, they wore masks then. But this subject goes back long before that. And believe it or not, this subject talked about during the time that the New Testament was written. Did you know that Jesus Christ had many things to say about those who wore masks? He had great contentions with those who chose to wear masks. And he condemned many of the religious leaders of his day for wearing those masks. The wearing of a mask was part of their doctrine or teaching that they held on to. Today I want to look and explore the mask wearing that Jesus Christ condemned. And the title of the sermon today is Throw Away Your Mask. Throw away your mask. Let's go start in Matthew chapter 16. I'll read, start in verse 1. I know you're all out there thinking, now where's he going with this? We'll see. Matthew 16, starting in verse 1. Here a group of the Pharisees and Sadducees that came to Christ and began to question him. Matthew 16, we'll read verse 1 through 4 to start out with. Then the Pharisees and the Sadducees came, testing him, asking that he would show them a sign from heaven. And he answered and said to them, when the evening you say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red, in the morning it will be foul weather today, for the sky is red and threatening. Hypocrites! You know how to discern the face of the sky, but you cannot discern the signs of the times. A wicked and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign shall be given to you except the sign of the prophet Jonah, and he left with them and depart. They had wanted a sign from Jesus, not they would have believed the sign if he'd given one, but Jesus Christ did give him the sign, the very sign that would prove he was the Messiah, that he would be in the grave, the tomb, 3 days and three nights, just as Jonah had been in the belly of the fish. Now, this conversation just took place after more than 4,000 people were fed with 7 loaves of bread and a few fishes. That wasn't enough sign for them. I mean, 4,000, wouldn't we love to do that? Make our grocery bill a lot less, wouldn't it? 4,000 people with just a few loaves of bread. Read verse 5 now. Now, when his disciples had come to the other side, they had forgotten to take bread. And Jesus said to them, take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And they reasoned among themselves, saying, it is because we took no bread. But Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, oh, you of little faith, why do you reason among yourselves because you have brought no bread? Do you not yet understand or remember the 5 loaves of the 5,000 and how many baskets you took up? Or the 7 loaves of 4,000, how many large baskets you took up? How is it you do not understand that I do not speak of you concerning bread, but to beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees? Then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of bread, but of the doctrine or the teaching of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Again, initially they didn't understand what he's talking about. They forgot, oh, We didn't bring any bread. That's what he's talking about. But he didn't. Finally, they realized they were talking about the doctrine or the teaching of the Pharisees. Let's go to Luke chapter 12. What was he talking about when he said, beware of the leaven or the doctrine of the Pharisees? Luke chapter 12, we read verses 1 and 2. Here, Jesus Christ plainly states what that leaven or that doctrine of the Pharisees that he was referring to. Luke chapter 12. Read verses 1 and 2. Luke 12, verses 1 and 2. In the meantime, when an innumerable multitude of people were gathered together, so they trampled one another, he began to say to his disciples, first of all, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. For nothing uncovered will not be revealed, nor hidden shall not be known. So Jesus Christ plainly warned them, what was the leaven of the Pharisees? It was hypocrisy. And because we're his disciples today as well, the same warning goes for each and every one of us as well. So what is hypocrisy? And why is it something you and I need to avoid? Dictionary.com defines hypocrisy as such, quote, the pretense of having virtuous character, moral or religious beliefs, or principles that one does not really possess. Some of the synonyms of hypocrisy is deceitfulness, pretense, fraud, insincerity, lip service, play acting, and so on and so on. And those who practice hypocrisy are called hypocrites. So what does the word hypocrite mean? Where does that word come get its meaning from? And what does that have to do with putting on a mask? The word translated hypocrite in the New Testament comes from the Greek word, spelled almost the same except for it has a K, H-Y-P-O-K-R-I-T-E-S. And it's pronounced, this is my best Greek, hypokrates. And it is a word that refers to who were actors at the time of the Greek stage. And I'll quote from GreekWordStudies.blogspot.com. Quote, the two nouns hypocrisy and hypocrite are compound words, consisting of hupo, which means under, and krino, which means to judge. It literally means to judge under, as a person giving off his judgment behind a screen or a mask. The true identity of the person is covered up by that mask. It refers to the acts of impersonation or deception that was used as an actor on the Greek stage. In Greek dramas, actors held over their face oversized masks painted to represent the character they were portraying. In this life, a hypocrite is someone who masks his real self by playing a part for the audience. So that's unquote. I tried to find a mask. That's the best I can do. I was looking for one that actually had the face, but you know, that's what they held in front of their faces, to hide their face. Happy time, bad time. So, I mean, that's what they did. So you couldn't see the person. And that's what the mask was all about. So being a hypocrite means you're playing a part in a play. And most of us, seen the mask, which you just showed, the actor would change the mask according to the situation in which the play was. If it was a tragedy, he put on a sad face. If it was a happy time, they put on a smile face. They also had varieties for animals, for older people, for women, for evil spirits. Just depending on what the play required. Again, to hide themselves behind that mask, to deceive. And where does this attitude of disguising oneself come from? Let's go to 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. We all should know this scripture when we get to reading it. We think about it. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. We'll read verses 13 through 15. Paul writes about those who claimed to be apostles, but they were wearing a mask. They were not real apostles. 2 Corinthians 11, starting in verse 13. 2 Corinthians 11, starting in verse 13. Paul wrote, "But such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Therefore, it's no great thing if his ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their works." The New Living Translation puts verse 14 this way, "But I'm not surprised. Even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light." And the word here, transform, means literally to transfigure or disguise. Just like the actors who put on a mask to disguise themselves, so does Satan do as well to those who serve him. They put on that mask to disguise their identity and to disguise the intent of what they want to do. An interesting fact about the word hypocrisy, hypocrite, and hypocrites. It's used 20 times in the gospel account. This is the King James Version. And only Jesus Christ uses the word as he condemns those who are hypocrites. No other use of the word hypocrite directed at another person is used by anybody else. No one but Jesus Christ. We'll read a little later on, Paul talked about someone who was playing the hypocrite, but it's a different word than the actual word used for hypocrite. But Jesus Christ very forcefully condemned the Pharisees because it was a way of life for them It wasn't a stumbling like we heard in the sermonette where you make a mistake and you get up. For the Pharisees, this was their way of life. We can see why Jesus Christ was so upset with the way the Pharisees constantly wore that mask and pretending to be something they weren't. So let's look at how the Pharisees, again, were practicing that hypocrisy. Let's point out point number one. Point number one. They love the praise of men. They love the praise of men. Let's go to Matthew chapter 6. That is one thing the Pharisees loved, was the praise of men. Matthew chapter 6, and we will start in verse 1. Okay. Matthew 6, start in verse 1. Again, we show that exactly what happened. Matthew, let's read verses 1 through 4. Jesus said, "Take heed, you not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward from your Father in heaven. For when that you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and the streets, that they may have glory from men. Or surely I say to you, they have their reward. But when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your charitable deeds may be done in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will openly reward you." Now, according to Matthew Henry's commentary on these verses, this is what he said, quote, "They would literally blow a trumpet to let everyone know they were going to give to the poor. They would do it on the corner of a street, or mainly, they said, where two streets met, so that everyone could hear the horn blow. Look at me, I'm getting ready to give some alms to the poor. Or they would do it in the synagogue with a lot of people around. And after they blew that trumpet, they would give their alms so that everyone would see what? They would see how righteous I am. Look at me. I'm giving all this to the poor. Look at me. It's all about me." The same is today. Excuse me. Thank you, Neil. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. The same is today. You know, how many times do we hear someone giving a generous donation to a college, to a certain organization, and what do? They have a big announcement. They put ads in the paper. They get the media there, get all the big swigs there to see it and to make that contribution. And usually they'll name, if it's a college, they'll name a wing of the college after them or something like that. Again, but that's their reward. That's their reward, the praise of men. That's their reward. That's all they get. That's all they receive for their charity if that's their purpose, just to be seen. But you and I are not supposed to do that. We're supposed to do our deeds quietly, that people don't know it. Our deeds are to be done to the glory of God, not to our own glory, to the glory of God. That's what our deeds are supposed to be done, quietly without knowing. To God, all glory is given. That should be you and I's mindset. Totally different than the Pharisees. Let's read verses 5 and 6. "And when you pray, you should not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues, on the corners of the street. Why? That they may be seen by men. Or surely I say to you, they have their reward. But when you pray, go into your room, and when you have shut your door, pray to your Father who is in the secret place. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly." The same thing they would do. They would pray on the street corner so everyone could see how righteous they were. They pray in the synagogue, long prayers. Again, that's what they received, the praise of men. And we see that today too. If you think about that, our politicians, how many times will you're a politician, at the end will say, "God bless America." Now, during that speech he gave, he may be talking about, you know, abortion rights for women. He may be talking about all kinds of stuff like that and different things like that in the same speech. But at the end, he'll say, and you've heard it, "God bless America." Again, why is he saying "God bless America"? To be seen by men. That's what it is. He's a hypocrite, to look good before men. Not to pick on the politicians, but they're an easy one to pick on. The majority of our prayer should be private between us and God. We know that, the vast majority. We know there are public prayers. We have prayer before services. We pray a prayer after services. We have prayers before meal publicly at times, and that's fine. But our prayers are not gone up so that everybody could see how righteous we are, again, to have the praise of men. Let's read verse 16 through 18. Moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites, with a sad countenance, for they disfigure their face that they may appear to men to be fasting. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But you, when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, so that you may not appear fast to men to be fasting, but to your Father who is in a secret place, and your Father who sees you secret rewards you openly. It's the same with fasting. Again, the Pharisees had to make it look, oh, I'm fasting again, you know, two or three times a week. How righteous I am. But you and I, we're not supposed to do that. Now, on a Day of Atonement, we're all the same. We know that. Everybody's fasting that day. But otherwise, no one should know, except perhaps your mate, that you're fasting. Because it's between you and God. It's not for other people to know. Let's go to Matthew 23. Matthew 23, and we'll start in verse 5. Matthew 23, verse 5. After the Pharisees had tried to trip up Christ about whether paying taxes were lawful, and then the Sadducees come along and ask about the wife who had the seven brothers, who had the one wife. Then the scribe asked about which was the greatest commandment. And all they were trying to do is trip him up. Now the entire chapter, Matthew 23, is Christ condemning the Pharisees and the scribes for their hypocrisy. The entire chapter. We'll look at some of those verses that show how they love the praise of men. We'll start in verse 5. But all their works they do to be seen by men. They make their phylacteries broad and enlarge the borders of their garments. They love the best places at feasts, the best seats in the synagogue, greeting in the marketplace to be called by men, Rabbi, Rabbi. But you do not be called Rabbi, for one is your teacher, the Christ, and you are all brethren. So again, they love to be seen. They love everyone to see them. With the extra rod on their clothes, anybody from long ways could see. They are very righteous. Look at their clothes. Look what they're wearing. They're very righteous. Again, it was to be seen by men. And also you see right there, they love to be seen by men by being in the most prominent seats. Wouldn't be the front row now. I guess it would be the back row. But that's what they love, to be seen. Let's go to point number two. Point number two, the Pharisees, they love the traditions of men. They love the traditions of men. So many times when they confronted Jesus Christ, it was about their traditions rather than the actual law. Mark chapter 7. Mark chapter 7, we'll start in verse 1. Mark chapter 7, we'll start in verse 1. The Pharisees here, again, criticizing Christ because the disciples did not follow the traditions of the elders. Mark chapter 7, we'll start in verse 1. And when the Pharisees and some of the scribes came together to him, having come from Jerusalem, and when they saw that some of his disciples eat bread with undefiled, that is, unwashed hands, they found fault. For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they wash their hands in a special way, holding to the traditions of the elders. And when they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash. And there are many other such things which they received and hold, like washing of cups, pitchers, copper vessels, and couches. Then the Pharisees and the scribes asked him, why do your disciples not walk according to the traditions of elders and eat with unwashed hands? Now, does that mean they just come in filthy? No, that's not what this means. Commentary notes from Chuck Smith on this particular event was, quote, they were extremely concerned about being ceremonially unclean. For the reason for washing a certain way was this. If you got dust or dirt on your hands, that dirt might have come off a Gentile, and therefore the dirt was unclean. So you had to wash your hands in a way that the dirt or the dust, as it came off in the water, did not touch any part of you. If a drop of water came off your hands and touched your garment, then you were still unclean. So you had to hold your hands a certain way to keep this from happening. So it wasn't because your hands were dirty, but it was to get the unclean dust off you. The idea that the dust might have touched a Gentile and touched them was abhorrent to them. And what they would do, they would take and wash their hands and hold their hands out like this, so the water would drip and not defile them. That's what it was talking about eating with unwashed hands. It's not like the disciples just, you know, came in and their hands were filthy. It was a ceremonial thing. If a single piece of dust off a Gentile touched them, then they considered themselves unclean. That was a ceremony. That was the thing that they'd passed on. But Jesus Christ was not happy with that hypocrisy from them. Read verses 6 through 8. And he answered and said to them, "Well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites. As is written, 'This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me, and in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men.' For laying aside the commandment of God, you and hold the tradition of men, the washing of pitchers and cup, and many other such things you do." They considered the traditions of their elders more important than the laws of God. And the same thing happens today. The traditions, think of the traditions of men, they're a direct contrast with what the Bible tells us to do. Consider, why do Christians observe Sunday? You can look in the scripture and you can see what the Bible says, doesn't it? Why do they do that instead of keeping the Sabbath? Because it's a tradition of men. Why do they keep Christmas? I mean, Christmas is widely known. We've just gone through that recently. You see it in the newspaper. You see all kinds of articles saying that Christmas is pagan origins. And yet, they continue to keep it. There's no pretense anymore. Probably 40 years ago, at least there was a pretense. And now they don't even care. They just said, well, but that's okay. Our traditions is to keep it now. We don't keep it like they do, but it's our traditions. What do rabbits and eggs have to do with the resurrection of Jesus Christ? What do they have to do with it? Absolutely nothing. Again, traditions of men rather than what the law says out of the Bible. So even though the Pharisees did it then, nothing has changed. As we can see, people still keep the traditions of men higher than the Word of God. Let's read verses 9 through 13. He said to them, "All too well you reject the commandments of God that you may keep your tradition. For Moses said, 'Honor your father and mother, and he who curses his father or mother, let him put to death.' But you say, 'If a man says to his father or mother, whatever profit you might have received from me is Corban, that is, a gift to God, then you no longer let him do anything for his father or his mother, making the word of God of no effect through your traditions, which you've handed down, and many such things." All they had to do was say that the gift, their money, their property, was devoted to God. That's what the word Corban means. It was given to the temple treasury. So by saying that, it was dedicated to the temple. And therefore, the person was exempt from taking care of his parents. It's a loophole, again, to ensure and enrich themselves. But it broke the commandment, what God has said, about taking care of your mother and your father. And also, it enriched the priest who had control of the temple. So they encouraged it as well. More money to the temple. Yeah, good thing. Despite, again, like Jesus said, it broke the commandments of God. Their traditions were considered greater than the commandments of God. Let's go to point number three on this. Point number three. They love to devise evil. They love to devise evil. And all was done in a pretense of how righteous they were, putting on that mask of hypocrisy. Let's go to Matthew chapter 23 again. Matthew chapter 23 again. We'll read verse 13. We'll start in verse 13. Matthew 23, starting verse 13. We'll pick it up where we left off before. He says, "But woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites, For you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, for you neither allow yourself to go in, nor allow those who are entering to go in. And again, there we go. Not only would they not allow those who believed Christ, they would kick them out of the synagogue. They didn't believe it. But if you believed and confessed that he was a Christ, they wouldn't even let you in the synagogue. Verse 14. Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses, and a pretense make long prayers, therefore you receive greater condemnation. Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites, for you travel land and sea to win one proselyte, and when he is won, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourselves. Not only did they steal the widows' houses, but they also sought out people to make worse than them. Proselytes made them even worse, teach them worse. And what would they do in the meantime? Put on a pretense of long prayers and how righteous they were, how that they were doing what's right. Putting on this show while they're devising evil. Verse 23. Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin and neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. Blind guides, you strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. If you read, they were very careful to count every little seed. Every little seed. They could not, you know, if it's the 10th one, if they lost one, it'd be bad. Every leaf they got. Meantime, as you read, they would steal widows' houses. And they would cheat and they would steal, pretending to be righteous, neglecting the weightier matters of the law. Verse 25. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you cleanse the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside are full of extortion and self-indulgence, and my margin says unrighteousness. Blind Pharisees, cleanse the inside of the cup and the dish, that the outside of them may be clean as well. All that mattered to the Pharisees is that the outside looked good. Now think about the analogy that Jesus gave there. You got this nice, beautiful porcelain cup. You're going to get coffee in it, right? It looks beautiful, how it's nice and shiny on the inside. It's full of filth and mud and disgusting stuff like that. You fill it up, you drink out of it. Every time you go drink out of it, you see all that filth inside. But that doesn't matter as long as the outside looks good. That is the attitude that they have. Again, that's why Jesus Christ called them hypocrites. No one thought about cleaning up the evil in their heart first. Their whole lives were strictly pretense. Verse 27. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you're like the whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. Even so, you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you're full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous, and say, if we lived in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers of them in the blood of the prophets. Therefore, you are witnesses against yourselves that you are sons of those who murdered the prophets. Fill up then the measure of your father's guilt. Serpents, brood of vipers, how can you escape the condemnation of hell? And no wonder Jesus Christ was up there upset with the Pharisees. Again, they put on a big talk. They put on a big show about how they were concerned. In the meantime, they were committing all this evil and their hearts were wicked. It's similar to what we hear today at times. You'll hear people talk about the concerns, about the homeless, the poor, the crime victims, and so on and so on. And yet, they never give their money to help out, do they? They want you to give your money to help out. But they'll talk about how important it is to take care of these things. They can say one thing one day, the next day turn around and say something totally opposite. And I expect, I guess people don't remember 24 hours. And there's one particular I remember, and I'm not going to mention her name, but everything she does was for the children. She said, oh, everything's for the children. We got to take care of the children. very prominent politician. Meantime, she supported abortion. How can that be? How can everything be for the children when you want to kill the children? Again, hypocrisy. Hypocrisy. And we see it in the what we call the Christian ministry in this world. They'll talk about how much they love God, how much they love God and God's word, and yet they'll support the right to abortion. If you look, there's a lot of, and I'll say Christian in quote, churches that support all this transgendered and all these other things that are out that are so wrong. And yet, they claim to be Christian, and yet they don't care. They don't follow the law of God. How can you say, again, how can you say as a Christian, whether you're a minister or just a Christian, how can you say you love God and yet you support the shedding of innocent blood? How can you say that? You can't unless you're, again, you're being a hypocrite, devising evil. It's just evil, just all it is. At least seven times that I counted, the Pharisees and others had tested or tempted Christ. Let's go to Matthew 22, back at just a couple chapters. Pretending to be asking legitimate questions, but instead they were trying to trip him up and accusing again of wrong. Matthew 22, verse 15. Matthew 22, verse 15. Then the Pharisees went and plotted how they might entangle him in his talk. And they sent to him their disciples with Herodians and saying, "Teacher, we know that you are true. Teach the way of God in truth. Do not care about anyone, for you do not regard the person of men. Tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" But Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, "Why do you test me, you hypocrites? Show me the tax money." So they brought him a denarius, and he said to them, "Whose image and inscription is on this?" They said to him, "Caesar's." And he said to them, "Render therefore to Caesar things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." And when he heard these words, they marveled and left him and went their way. Again, they tried to flatter him first. You notice what he said? "Oh, we know you're true. We know you speak the truth." Of course, they're lying because they don't believe it. They speak the truth. "We know that you don't have any regard for the individual." But Jesus Christ saw right through their hypocrisy, didn't he? He knew what they were doing. Let's look at one other time they attempted, to accuse him. John chapter 8. John chapter 8, verses 3 through 6, 3 through 11. And we're talking about, again, how much they love to devise evil and do things. And they did. Always trying to accuse Jesus Christ. But in this particular situation, this is very interesting, is they didn't even follow the law which they said they were supposed to. John chapter 8, this is the woman caught in adultery. Funny thing is, they only brought the woman. They only brought the woman. You know, it takes a man and a woman to commit adultery last time I checked. In Leviticus chapter 20, verse 10, it plainly states that both a man and the woman will be put to death for committing adultery. And when I read that, sometimes I think, so who was the man? Who was the man? Was he someone who's politically connected? Or was he someone who's important that they wouldn't bring him in? Because again, under the law, both of them were required to be stoned. We'll start in verse 3. Then the scribes and the Pharisees brought to him a woman caught in adultery. When they set her in the midst, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman was caught in adultery in the very act. Now, under Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned, but what should you say?" And again, how could she be caught in adultery? There's only one person, right? The man wasn't there. Both of them were supposed to, according to the law of Moses, verse 6. Then he said, testing him that they might have something to which you accuse him. But Jesus stooped down and wrote on the ground with his finger as though he did not hear. And when they continued to ask him, he raised himself up and said to them, "He who is without sin among you, let him throw a stone at her first." And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. And those who heard it, being convicted by their conscience, went out one by one, beginning with the oldest to the last. And Jesus was left alone and the woman standing in the midst. When Jesus raised himself up and saw no one but the woman, he said to her, "Woman, where are your accusers of yours? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said to her, "Neither do I, but also, last part, go and sin no more." Go and sin no more. But again, they knew the law. They knew when they brought him, that brought the woman before Jesus Christ, that the law said both were to be stoned. Both of them. They only brought one, though. They pretended, again, they pretended to not care, just to find a way to accuse Jesus Christ, plotting evil a time and time and time against Jesus Christ. Let's go to Matthew 26. Matthew 26, reading, start in verse 59. This is another area where time that they, again, tried to question Christ, tried to trip him up. Not interested at all in the truth, as we read it, but trying to trip him up. After being arrested, he was taken to the Sanhedrin to be questioned by the high priest and others. And did they try to question him to find out what was true? Or did they do it again wickedly to devise evil against Jesus Christ? I think we know that answer. Matthew 26, starting in verse 59. "Now the chief priests and the elders and all the council sought false testimony against Jesus Christ to put him to death." There's the answer right there, isn't it? What did they seek? The truth, right? No. False testimony, but found none. Even though many false witnesses came forward, they found none. But alas, two false witnesses came forward and said, "This fellow said, I'm able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days." The high priest rose and said to him, "Do you answer nothing? What it is that these men testify against you?" But Jesus kept silent. Then a high priest answered and said to him, "I put you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God." And Jesus said to him, "It is as you say. Nevertheless, I say to you, hereafter you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his clothes, saying, "He has spoken blasphemy. What further need we need of witnesses? Look, you've heard his blasphemy. What do you think?" They answered and said, "He is deserving of death." Were they interested in the truth? No, they wanted false witnesses. And then the high priest pretended what Jesus Christ, what he did was made him worthy of death. They plotted evil against him, again, pretending to be righteous. Pretending to be righteous. But you know, the Pharisees, we're going to Acts 5. The Pharisees weren't the only one mentioned in the New Testament who pretended one thing and were actually another. The Bible records some who came before the apostles, tried to look good in the eyes of the church, but in reality they were lying. They had that mask of hypocrisy on. Acts chapter 5 is the account where two people deliberately pretended to do something to look good in the eyes of those around him. They put on that mask to hide their real intent. They put on that mask of hypocrisy, but it cost them their lives. It's account of Ananias and Sapphira. They loved the praise of men more than they loved the truth. Acts chapter 5, verse 1. "But a certain man named Ananias, with Sapphira, his wife, sold a possession. And he kept back part of the proceeds, his wife also being aware of it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet." Why did they do that? To look like they were giving everything they had. But Peter said, "Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and keep back part of the price of the land for yourself? While it remained, was it not your own? And after you sold it, was it not in your own control? Why have you conceived this thing in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God." Then Ananias, hearing these words, fell down and breathed his last. So there was great fear upon all those who heard these things. And the young man arose and wrapped him up and carried him out and buried him. It was about 3 hours later, his wife came in, not knowing what had happened. And Peter answered her, "Tell me whether you sold the land for so much." And she said, "Yes, for so much." And Peter said to her, "How is it you've agreed together to test the Spirit of the Lord? Look, the feet of those who buried your husband are at the door, and they will carry you out." And immediately she fell on his feet and breathed her last. And the young men came and found her dead and carried her out and buried her by her husband. So great fear came upon all the church and all who heard these things. Why did they do that? Why did they do that? Did they think that they could get away with it? Did they think they could be, again, they were putting on that mask of hypocrisy, pretending to be something they weren't, pretending to give all they had. They could have held back. They didn't have to give all of it, did they? They didn't have to give any of it if they didn't want. But again, the end result was what? Of their hypocrisy. It cost them their life, didn't it? They loved the praise of men, which they thought they would get, obviously, rather than the truth. Rather than the truth. Let's go to Galatians chapter 2. Galatians chapter 2, we'll start in verse 11. 11 through 13. We've seen it, obviously, Jesus Christ very upset with those who practice hypocrisy because it was a way of life for them. But the Bible shows that even one of the disciples, one who's taught by Jesus Christ himself, put on that same mask of hypocrisy at one time. And he was a leading apostle of the New Testament church. Galatians chapter 2, verse 11 through 13. Peter came down with a group of men to visit Antioch, where Paul was, but he fell into the old habit of being taught from the youth of being a Jew, what he did. Now when Peter came to Antioch, I withstood him to his face, because he was to be blamed. For before certain men came from James, he would eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing those who were of the circumcision. And the rest of the Jews also played the hypocrite with him. So even Barnabas was carried away with their hypocrisy. You know, the Jews wouldn't eat with the Gentiles, because they were considered unclean, as we know. Peter knew better. He knew better, but he got carried away at the moment. I'm sure that when Paul rebuked him, that Peter said to those involved that he was wrong. I'm confident he apologized when he realized what he did. But it just shows us what? It shows us even an apostle like Peter can make mistakes, again, as we heard the sermonette, and fall into that act of hypocrisy. You know, you wouldn't think Peter would do that, right? But anyone can. You and I as well. You and I can be just as guilty at times if we're not careful. So how do you and I avoid putting on that massive hypocrisy? Let's consider some things that will help us not to become or not to be a hypocrite. We're going to look at three B's. Three B's. Number one, be humble. Be humble. Being humble is a certain antidote to hypocrisy. We're going to Luke 18. Luke 18. You know, we mentioned the Pharisees and how the pride they had. Luke 18, if you remember, this is the parable of the publican or the tax collector and the Pharisee. Let's go and read that. Luke 18, starting in verse 9. Luke 18, we've been using the Pharisees as an example of what not to be. And this particular parable shows a lack of humility that this particular Pharisee had. Luke 18, and starting in verse 9, verse 9 is an interesting verse when you think about what he was saying. Also, he spoke this parable to some who did what? Who trusted in themselves that what? They were righteous. But what did they do? And they despised others. They were righteous, but that's what they thought. Verse 10, two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee, the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. There he was. You know, the Pharisee was sure he was righteous. He was doing what he should. He was fasting. He was paying his tithes. He wasn't an adulterer. He was very humble, right? Very humble. He was very proud of what he did, obviously. Verse 13. And the tax collector, standing afar off, would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled. He who humbles himself will be exalted. The tax collector, he knew he wasn't perfect. He knew he had shortcomings. He knew there was no way that he was, quote, righteous before God. Instead, what did he do? He humbled himself and asked for God's mercy. He asked for God's mercy. And that's the attitude that pleases God. You and I, the same way, we realize that we're not righteous before God in that aspect. We have to have the mercy of God. That's the attitude, the humility that God expects. Chapter 14 here in Luke. Read verses 7 through 11. That's the attitude, because the Pharisee thought because he was keeping the law that he was righteous. And we know there's no way you can keep the law perfectly. And even if you could, it would not be your righteousness that saves you. It's God's mercy. Chapter 14, verse 7, Jesus reminded those who wanted the best seats to consider their action. Consider what they were doing. Luke 14, verse 7. So he told a parable to those who invited when he noted that they chose the best places, saying to them, when you're invited to anyone to a wedding feast, do not sit in the best place. Let someone more honorable than you be invited by him. And he who invited you will and come him come and say to you, give place to this man, then you shall again with shame to take to the lowest place. But when you're invited, go and sit down at the lowest place, so that when he who invited you shall come, may come and say to you, friend, come up higher. Then you'll have glory in the presence of those who sit at the table with you. For whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. It's better to show the humility, even in a case like that. Don't take the best seats. Humility, even in a physical thing, you will be rewarded by being humble. Let's go to the next B. B number two, be sincere. Be sincere. The word translated sincere in the Old King James Version only appears twice in the whole Bible. It's Strong's number 1506. And Strong's defines it this way, judged by the Son, tested as genuine, pure, or sincere. It'd be like holding an item of pottery. You see it in the dark. The merchant claims it's great. You know, it's perfect and all that. You take it out in the sun, the light shines on that pottery, and you'll see if there's imperfections there. The light will reveal that imperfection. Is it perfect? Is it genuine? Is it sincere? CollinsDictionary.com defines sincere as not hypocritical, not deceitful, but open and genuine, being sincere. There is a thought that the word sincere came from the two Roman words without wax on pottery. And I've read that, had an article I could have brought, but it can't be proven. So sincere, basically these things are being judged by the Son. Philippians chapter 1, read verses 9 through 11. Philippians chapter 1, read 9 through 11. Philippians chapter 1. We're told to be sincere in this life, an entire life, until Jesus Christ returns. Philippians chapter 1, verses 9 through 11. And this I pray, that your love may abound still more and more in knowledge and in discernment, that you may approve the things which are excellent, and that you may be sincere. Again, what does sincere mean? Pure, genuine, and without offense until the day of Christ, being filled with the fruits of righteousness, which are by Jesus Christ to the glory of God, to the glory and praise of God. So you and I are to be sincere without hypocrisy, genuine, everyone we react with. We're not supposed to put on airs. We're supposed to be real, the real deal, not fake. Not like the example of the Pharisees we read earlier. So look at the last B. B number three is be truthful. Be truthful. Be truthful. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. We'll read some familiar verses. Verses 26 through 29. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26 through 29. And we read these verses, and we look at ourselves. These verses tell us who we really are. We look at these verses and be truthful. There is no reason for us to be boastful at all. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26 through 29. For you see your calling, brethren. That's talking to us. For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame things which are mighty. And the base things, or as Maya Margin says, the insignificant, the lowly things of the world, and things which are despised, God has chosen, that the things which are not, to bring to nothing the things that are. Why? That no flesh should glory. If we're truthful with ourselves, we understand God did not call us because of our greatness by any means. Instead, it's just the opposite. What does it say? The base, the insignificant things, the things that are despised. No one pays attention to you and I in that way. And we understand that. God chose that, again, that no flesh should glory, that all the glory goes to God. All the gifts you and I have been given, we have been given. All the things we have that we're given, you know, whether we can sing, whether we can serve, whatever the gifts we have, we didn't give them to ourselves. They're gifts from God. And there's no reason that any of us should be proud of our gifts. We should be thankful and use the gifts to God's glory. But they're, you know, to be truthful, and we all know, you and I, we fall short, don't we? We know we fall short. We know we have to be humble. We know we need to be sincere. We know we had that attitude of truthfulness. That's just the opposite of hypocrisy. God hates hypocrisy because it involves deception. It involves deception. We have to have the same humble attitude as we've read many times that little children have. That same attitude. So we see here the wearing of masks is not a modern occurrence. It's been around as long as man has been on this earth. And you and I must make sure that we're not putting on that mask. I'd like to finish by going to Romans 12. And read verses 9 through 18. Romans 12, verses 9 through 18. Good basic advice from Paul, telling us how, again, if we'd avoid putting on that mask of hypocrisy if we follow what he says. Romans chapter 12, verses 9 through 18. Romans 12, verse 9. Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love. In honor, give in preference to one another, not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continually steadfastly in prayer, distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind towards one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinion. Repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. And if possible, as much as it depends on you, live peaceably with all men. I'd like to read finally verse 16 from the NIV. I like the way the NIV put it. It says, live in harmony with one another. Don't be proud. Be willing to associate with people of low position. Don't be conceited. Well, that's all of us, isn't it? We're all, we just read, we're all low position as far as the world goes. Being humble, being sincere, again, being truthful is an antidote that will take care of the sin of hypocrisy. You know, who knows what's going to happen in the future? When it comes to a physical mask, it's very possible we may go through that again. We don't know. That doesn't matter in some ways. But you and I must make sure that we never put on that mask of hypocrisy. So let every one of us make sure we throw away that mask of hypocrisy.